Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, and Breaking the Silence radio show. It's great to have you tonight. Look how clear the weather is this evening. We're looking over Texas Medical Center here behind me, and the sun has actually gone down a little bit lower than it normally is at this time. It's just been a beautiful day. We are experiencing heat out the kazoo. I don't know what that means, but look it up in the dictionary. It means it's hotter than a hornet out there. It's about 95, 97, 100 in that area, and the humidity is just, oh man. But that's Houston, and I just literally love it. So welcome to the program tonight. I would love, this is one of those programs that I think the guest tonight has the wisdom that would love to be able to interact with you. So if you have any questions tonight on the topic of what we're going to be discussing here just shortly, jot this down, 888-627-6008, and the wonderful people of BBS Radio will answer the phone and be kind and cordial, and they don't pre-screen. They will just tap you right into us, and we're going to do live radio with you tonight. So we would love for you to be involved. If you want to watch, I am looking right down here at the side of, on the old iPad and watching my son Curtis deal with our Facebook page, Shattered by the Darkness. And he's there if you have a comment. If you want to have a question or comment through that, post it on there, and he may come on later on in the program and share those. I want to let you know that the Shattered by the Darkness book this week, this 2 days ago, went to number 16 on Amazon. This has been out for 3 years. It's still doing great. We hit over 440-some thousand copies of this thing, and it's just unbelievable. And I keep telling you this, and I've told you it for a year. Overcoming the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come are almost ready to roll. So we're getting close on that, closer than what we were yesterday. And keep me in your thoughts and your best wishes for that, as breaking out two books at the same time. What was I thinking? But anyway, next week, I want to really encourage you to be here. Cindy Stanford is going to be our guest. She is a returning guest. She is the CEO of the founder of ACES Matter, and unbelievable organization. She has some exciting things that we're going to share with you, and it's going to be a good conversation. That'll be August 8th, right here, 8 p.m. Central Time, each Sunday night. I believe this is our second year anniversary of being on the radio. And it's just wonderful to be with the BBS family and being part of what we do. And I think we've had some of the most awesome guests that's in this area of expertise in the nation. And tonight is no exception to that rule. Michael Pritchard from California, we're going to get exactly not his actually home address, but his city from where he lives. And he has more initials behind his name than I have in my whole entire name. But it's Michael Pritchard. He had MSSAPLLLAADC and ICAADC. And I don't know what any of that means, but it means that this man has some intelligence. I met Michael, I believe it was at a CCAP convention and conference. In San Diego, maybe?
Was it San Diego?
It was LA. It was right outside LA.
It was Orange County. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it was wonderful. And I remember I was getting ready to speak, and they said, oh, by the way, the chair of the organization just walked in, and he came and sat the table almost right in front of them. Oh, no, here goes my nerves. But a great individual. He is the owner of Covenant Training and Consulting, and he's been employed as a substance abuse in the substance abuse. I like the way he puts this, substance use disorder profession for over 11 years. And he has a master's of science in addiction counseling and is a certified substance use disorder counselor. We're going to talk about all the things that he does, how maybe COVID has affected things, and what's the answers that maybe he can help us deal with our own people that's in our family, in our friendship circle, in your children. So welcome to the program, Michael Pritchard from California. Michael, can you hear me all right?
I can. Thank you so much for the introduction. And yeah, I really enjoyed having you at that conference. Your speech, your presentation really impacted my wife, who she is comfortable with me saying she was a long-term victim, county case, abuse case, sexual abuse. And it was really, I think, impactful for her to hear you come out and talk about that. She immediately read your book, and it was impactful for her. And so I thank you for writing it, and thank you for coming to speak and being honest about what happened to you. I think that it's, you know, a lot, it empowers people to talk about the issue.
Well, CCAP is a wonderful, I have fallen in love with the organization, and I've done several different things with you all. And hopefully in the next few years, we're going to do even more together. What is CCAP? I don't even know what, I know what it stands for, but sure. Explain what the purpose of CCAP is in the organization.
Sure. So CCAP stands for the California Consortium of Addiction Programs and Professionals. We're the largest certifying organization for drug and alcohol counselors in the state. We also have an education arm. We have an education arm, credentialing arm, and membership arm. So each state in the United States has an affiliate through what they call the International Certification and Reciprocity Consortium. So that's kind of a national organization that has affiliates in each state that allows credentialed counselors in a lot of cases to, like, if they wanted to move to another state, to be able to transfer their credentials. So we're the affiliate there, but we're also the number one. We're the biggest, probably the biggest addiction advocacy organization, in my opinion, in California. And we do a lot of legislation, and I'm serving as the legislative chair this year. And we're trying to, you know, break stigma, trying to, you know, pass legislation to better services and for public safety around substance use, because there's still a lot of stigma around it. There's a lot of predators in the field bad actors that we want to try to protect through legislation. And so there's a lot of things that CCAP does. Over the years, it has really grown leaps and bounds, and we have a large membership and a whole lot of certified drug and alcohol counselors out there doing amazing work, even through the pandemic, which has been, you know, mental health issues and substance use disorders have just skyrocketed during the last year.
I think I spoke at, it was either a monthly meeting or a quarterly meeting not too long ago. And I always join early because I'm one of those OCD people who like to be really early to meetings and make sure that I'm on and everything's good. And I was listening. When you said the legislative side, there's a representative, I think, from Washington, D.C., that was saying, okay, we have this going on in the laws. We have this going on in the Senate. It's like, wow, this organization isn't just a group of people that sit around and eat bonbons. They are really active in the field and putting their battle gear on to go try to fight for what they believe in.
We are. We have a national lobbyist. That's Andrew Kessler with Slingshot Solutions in D.C. He's been amazing. I've been to D.C. And done some advocacy work with him. We usually try to go annually. I've been twice. We have a state representative, Sherry Daly, with CCAP, who we have a lobbyist here, who CCAP works with at the state level. So we really have our hands in a lot. When I went to DC last time, we met with a lot of the nationally prominent organizations that deal with substance use disorders and its associated problems. So we really do. We're expanding our relationships and our reach every single year, and really collaborating with these national and other state organizations that are like-minded to really try to get people the help that they need.
Is there a difference, and excuse my lack of wisdom on this, with a difference of, because I made the mistake when I was reading your bio, substance abuse disorder and a substance use disorder. Is there a difference, or is just a different way of saying it?
Well, so I think substance abuse is kind of, it can be a subjective and kind of loaded term, and almost substance abuse is, it has a little stigma attached to it. So the clinical term is substance use disorder. Substance addiction is kind of like, the overarching term that they use for addiction in general. But a substance use disorder kind of falls along a spectrum of mild, moderate, and severe. So it's really, substance use disorder is kind of what's tied to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So that's why it's more medical. It's more of a medical terminology. So we try to use the term SUD. The Department of Healthcare Services uses that language in California. So that's what we have moved away from, substance use to substance use, misuse, and substance use disorder. So.
Fantastic. With that knowledge and your work with CCAP, how does your work in your own professional world interact with that, with the Covenant Training and Consulting? What's that all about?
So I wear a lot of hats. CCAP is is an advocacy organization that works with the State Department of Healthcare Services. They don't work for them; that we work with them. So the Department of Healthcare Services oversees all the SUD services for all the counties in California, and of course, the majority of the counselors are certified with CCAP. So there's crossover in my work. I work full-time for Fresno County Department of Behavioral Health. I was in contracted services there and kind of was an analyst overseeing some of the SUD contracts, and I was a program auditor. Now I work in SUD prevention for Fresno County. And so, CCAP also kind of oversees the prevention certificates as well as the SUD counselor certificates, and there's advocacy. It's kind of hard to explain. there's a lot of crossover in what we do. So basically, I work for the county full time in prevention services. I'm on the board of CCAP doing advocacy work. I'm the representative for my district in the state to the CCAP board. I teach in criminology part-time for Fresno State, and I train social workers in child welfare in 12 counties in California. And then Covenant Training and Consulting is relatively new. So in my work with the county, the county let me go out and train allied professionals that really had a knowledge deficit on addiction. Physicians, police officers, attorneys, therapists, public health nurses. And as I began to do this training, I thought, there's just a real need. There's a lot of misunderstanding around substance use disorder. And I was getting a lot of calls from people who gave my number to people, families who needed help. And so I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and open up kind of like my own little organization and educate the public in my own time also on substance use and kind of educate families and do assessments and refer them out to services as needed. And so that was one half of Covenant Consulting. And then the other half was the Department of Transportation. So I'm a qualified DOT qualified substance use professional. So when somebody who holds a commercial driver's license or works in a DO regulated industry test positive or on a drug test, or they, refuse to test, there's a bunch of different factors. They have to go see somebody with my credential to take them through the return to work process. So Covenant Training Consulting is kind of like my own thing, and it's got the DOT portion of it. And then it's got like public education and family education and assessment so that I can help get people into treatment in my own time. So I do a lot of different things. And that's all I've ever done really is substance use and intimate partner violence. And I've just done it in a variety of different settings.
So what got you interested initially with getting you involved in this type of work? Normally there is a backstory. I'm not for sure there is or not, but what got you interested in dealing with substance use disorders?
Yeah, you're right. There is typically a backstory. This isn't something usually people choose for their career. You know, nobody really grows up and says, I want to be a drug and alcohol counselor. There's usually something to it. So, you know, in my case, I feel like this career chose me. I don't feel like I chose the career. You know, there's been times where I was just like, told my wife, I'm like, can I do something else now? And she's like, what would you do? What else would you do? And I'm like, you're right. What else would I do? You know, it's addiction has always been at the forefront of my life. My dad, unfortunately, he was an alcoholic, severe alcoholic, and he was shot and killed in his addiction when I was 6 years old in the city that I live in. And so that really just took the wind out of my sails. Him and my mom, he would come and see me periodically, but he didn't really. His problem was severe enough to where he really didn't make an effort to see me. My mom tried to be a protective parent and kind of kept him at bay a little bit because, you know, of his behavior. Anyway, I always wanted to see my dad. And then when he died, that just kind of like my whole world went dark after that. And so I had behavioral problems in school. I didn't interact well with adults, you know, major, you know, depression issues, anxiety issues as a child, was real defiant with adults. My mom, my poor mom, she was very young. She had a hard time handling me. And then shortly after that, I had a series of sexual abuse issues happen in my own life that my mom didn't know about. And my mom raised me in church and stuff like that. And so like, I always felt that I didn't want to talk to my mom about these things because the way that I interpreted how they talked about sexual things in church made me feel guilty and kind of shameful about what happened. And so I never told my mom anything, and I carried these secrets around for a lot of years. And so by the time I was 10 years old, about the time my mom got remarried or started dating my stepdad, between those changes and the other things that had happened in my life, I was a half a pack a day smoker. By the time I was 11 or 12, I was getting drunk several times a week, on my own. By the time I was, you know, 13, 14 years old, I was already using meth and pills. And at 16 years old or 15 years old, I was diagnosed bipolar. I was placed on medication. I was put in a hospital, but I didn't want to take my medication. And so at 16, I started using methamphetamine pretty heavy, and I had a meth overdose. My mom had to take me to the hospital. And then I kept using to about the age of 18, bouncing around like to my grandpa's house, kind of dropped out of school. And then my family kind of pushed me into go to Teen Challenge. I went to Teen Challenge, which is like, you know, a church program. For like 2 months, ended up getting kicked out of there for fighting, but I actually stayed clean and sober for quite a long time because I found out shortly after I got home that I was going to have a child of my own. I was going to have a son, and I didn't want history to repeat itself. So I did well for a while, but I was on a lot of medication, and it was very difficult for me to remain clean and sober during that time, but I was able to do it. But then when me and his mother split up, Gabe's mother split up, I kind of went off the deep end shortly after that and went on a 7-year drug run, was in and out of jail, in and out of psychiatric hospitals, in and out of prison, went to prison twice. And then in 2006, when I was 30 years old, I had a spiritual awakening in prison that literally changed things for me. My mom was planning my funeral before I even went to prison. I mean, it was really, really bad, severe addiction. Nobody thought that I would make it. They had tried to rehabilitate me. Parole said basically that I was kind of unrehabilitatable, and they didn't know what to do with me. They thought long-term psychiatric care was going to be my destiny, and that's not what happened. And then when I got out, circumstances happened that just kind of eventually shifted my career direction this way. and doors started opening up for me. People started giving me opportunities. I ended up working in domestic violence shelters. I ended up working in child welfare for 3 years. I ended up, you know, training child welfare workers, ended up on the CCAP board, working for behavioral health, and then, you know, opening up Covenant Training and Consulting eventually, and then teaching at Fresno State. I'm off this semester, but I think they're going to bring me back on for next semester. So, you know, if nothing else, what people get out of my story is that, like, you should never give hope. You shouldn't ever give up hope on people, because you never know what could happen. And people can overcome the trauma that they experienced, you know. And, you know, that's what I tell social workers when I train them. I'm like, you know, for all intents and purposes, I was, you know, one of the parents that come in struggling with all these issues. And I know a lot of times it seems bleak, you know, but people can and do recover, and people can and go on and do significant things with their life. And today I have a great marriage. I own a home. My son graduated from Temple University this year. I get to see him. I got 2 stepdaughters out of that. I have 4 grandchildren out of that, and I'm able to be part of all of that. And people thought that I wouldn't even be alive today. So it's, you know, God did that for me. And I'm really grateful for everything that I have today.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask if there was a backstory. This is not a backstory. This is a back book. This would be an awesome book. We're going to take our first break as we're at that time. But I want to come back and I want to kind of finish the full circle of that, because I want to find out on the other side of the break, is there something that could have happened at that young age when something drastically happened with the death of your father that could have changed all the negative travel that you had to go down before realizing what your true destiny was to begin with? And how do we handle, and maybe how should we more open our minds to when something happens? And we always throw this out, and I just wrote about this the other day. Oh, kids are resilient. Oh, they have it in them, but they need somebody to be holding their hands during that. So we're going to talk about that right after our first commercial break. You will not want to miss the rest of this discussion tonight. 888-627-6008. And be right back with another segment with Michael Pritchard on Breaking the Silence. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the 3-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Wow, welcome back. I'm just overwhelmed with the first 20 minutes of the program already, talking to Michael Pritchard of California. And what city are you located there, Michael?
I'm in Central California. I'm in Fresno. Smack in the center. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you for being transparent and authentic and genuine. And I would love sometime to have you back on, and maybe with your wife, and if she would be wanting to share that story. But as you were telling yours, and it just started to snowball, and it seemed like that one event turned into another domino that knocked over the next domino, and it just kept going to the point where you were in prison, and everybody thought, well, he's going to come out in a body bag.
Yeah.
What did you need, or was there anything that could have triggered a positive outcome that wasn't there for you to be able to deal with a traumatic impact of losing your father at such an early age?
I've thought about this a lot over the years, and you know, it's I always question, and this is why it's so hard to write a book, is I always question the accuracy of my own memories, you know, in regard to these events. You know, this impacted everybody around my dad. So I had healthy grandparents on both sides, but, you know, it really devastated his mom and dad and family. And, you know, my mom was a struggling single mom and, you know, didn't know how to deal with trauma, didn't know how to deal with these behavior issues that were going on. And she was trying to, you know, work a job. And my mom loved me. She was a good mom. But didn't really know what to do, and nobody seemed to know what to do. But the more I go back in time and really think about what was going on with Michael in that time, especially with the sexual abuse that happened right after, is I really felt very alone. I didn't feel like I had anybody that I could talk to honestly about what was happening that wasn't, you know, my family. And because I had behavioral problems at school, you know, the teachers didn't look kindly on me either. So I didn't have, I was in trouble at home, trouble at school. And so I began to, not trust adults and, rightfully so. Right. And because of that, I you know, looking back, a trusting adult in my life would have been great. And oddly enough, well, not oddly enough, but, you know, one of the greatest resiliency factors with kids that, you know, that have these traumatic events in their life is, somebody who's cares and, you know, treats them with unconditional positive regard and is active and caring, you know, in their lives. And I don't always think that a family member per se is the best person to do that, depending on the family setup. Sometimes it's somebody on the outside, but I really didn't feel like I had that. I had real trust issues with adults because I always felt like I was going to be in trouble or, you know, if I disclosed information or if I, you know, acted up. And so, you know, I viewed adults as authority figures, and authority figures got Michael in trouble. So I just felt alone. And I honestly don't know under the circumstances if things could have been different as a young child. I did. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Are you a big advocate of trauma-informed care, trauma-informed teachers, trauma-informed, or is that an overused word?
No.
And everybody's jumping on it? I mean, because it sounds like you were looking and was in need of the teachers not looking at you as being, oh, you're the bad kid, but having that trauma-informed approach may have opened up one adult that you could have been guided a little bit and built trust.
Yeah, trauma-informed, I'm for trauma-informed everything related to human interaction in our public systems, whether it's in substance use disorder treatment, intimate partner violence shelters, child welfare, schools. You know, I you know, in our state, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, she's our Surgeon General for California. Her goal is to reduce ACEs by 50% in California because she's a physician and she realizes like this has a long-term impact, not just on individuals' lives, but on our healthcare system in general. And, you know, it used to be that kids were just viewed as kind of like bad seeds, right? Like, okay, they're just kind of behavioral problem and bad seeds. But like when you have kids acting out this way, usually something's underneath that. And, you know, if we can prevent that young and kind of like make kids feel cared for and kind of like divert them from going unhealthy directions, we can really prevent a lot of substance use disorders and other like, you know, violent behaviors and stuff that often happen in teenagers. Almost all addiction starts in teenagers. Almost none of it starts after the age of 30. Most people don't know that. It almost all starts in teenage years during that tumultuous period, and it's highly correlated with adverse childhood experiences. And, you know, there was Dr. DeFilippi. I don't know if you've seen the movie he did, Healing Name. Did you ever see that?
Yes. Okay.
So in that film, we use it for child welfare training. He says that the data showed that if you had an ACE score of 4 or higher, you were 1,350 times more likely to be an IV drug user later in life. If you had an ACE score of 6, you were 4,600 times more likely to be an IV drug user later in life. And according to him, he said that, you know, the epidemiologists at the CDC said these are stats they see once in a lifetime, once in a career. You know, it's adverse childhood experiences really are so highly correlated. I mean, almost correlated enough to be causal, you know, of a lot of addictive disorders. Drugs only change the way we feel. They don't do anything else. People either chase them for the positive benefit because they want the positive benefit of the drug, or they're trying to escape negative emotional states. Well, for people that have had trauma and they're, you know, battle with negative emotional states, that drug does not just make them feel good. It now becomes useful, right, to help them cope with their anxiety, with their stress, with their depression. And then as they use it as a tool, you know, the body reacts by building tolerance to the substance. A lot of times they develop a physical and psychological dependence on the drug. Then addiction morphs into its own problem on top of all of the trauma that they had. And then we have to deal with it with individuals in adulthood. And by then it's fully developed and a lot harder to get a handle on. So any trauma-informed care that we can do, and you know, the whole idea around prevention is mitigating risk factors and strengthening protective factors in youth to help them to not go those directions.
Well, there's so many questions that just are wanting to flow out because you're throwing out information that we talked about for the last 2 years on this program. And I believe everybody in the world is just now starting to get their teeth gripped into what ACEs really can do. What of your biggest pieces of advice that you would give to somebody right now that has a child that is dealing with adversity, stress, anxiety? And we'll talk about since the pandemic here a little bit later, but what do they need? What is one of the greatest needs teenagers have right now in today's world?
Oh, well, we're dealing with teenagers, and teenagers are, you know, it's an emotionally tumultuous time anyway, teenage years, and they're bombarded with, you know, with all kinds of, media information and pressures that we never even had when we were young. But, you know, getting them involved in alternative activities is huge, making sure that you check in on them. A lot of times, you know, teenagers can be so difficult that adults don't want to monitor them like they should monitor them because, you know, teenagers, their brains aren't developed and they're not always making sound decisions, you know, knowing where they're at, who they're with, who their friends are, what they're watching, what the music that they are listening, all of that stuff. And as much as like, you know, teenagers seem to hate adults in their business, it's actually, you know, depending on how you do it, it's a loving thing to do. It's because they're being monitored and cared for through this vulnerable period of teenage years until they get to the, you know, after the age of 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, right, when the brain stops developing. And they, you know, it's that period where all of these problems really start to develop. You know, in my county, first use of drugs and alcohol is usually between the ages of 12 and 14. So seventh grade through ninth grade, that's when it really starts. If it continues, if we can get them to the age of 25 or past the age of 25 and through those rough periods, because there's alternative activities and healthy adults in their life, we can actually stem off a lot of adult problems that they wouldn't have to deal with. You know,
The average teenager is begging, even though they would never admit it. I could get 100 teenagers in front of you and ask them the question. They would say, no, I don't want it. But do you think inside they're literally begging for borders, for guidelines, for directions, for
structure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you not think that they scream for that, but they just don't want to admit to it? They need that, and that gives them a security that they need in those years. What's your thought on that?
There was people that came into my life in my teenage years periodically at periods where I was having a rough time. One of them was a neighbor. She was a pastor's wife who kind of took me under her wing and started like taking me to church and just, you know, speaking wisdom into my life in a variety of different ways. And that kept me really from going over the edge at age 14, 15, you know, and then like, you know, I would veer off and go kind of off the deep end for a while, but then, you know, somebody else would come into my life who would care for me for a while, but it was very, you know, short-lived. You know, kids need a consistent adult interaction. That's why I love prevention programs that last through junior high and high school. There's a TA, an assistant that I work with Fresno State, and I oversee Friday Night Live contract for Fresno County. And she told me this week, she goes, oh, I was a youth that went through that program all the way through, and it got me involved and taught me leadership skills. And she was telling me about what she gained out of the program. I'm like, yeah, it provided alternative activities. It like exposed you to healthy adults that helps you like grow into adulthood. Right. And I think that's what's lacking a lot with kids nowadays is, you know, and adults don't know how to really deal with the resistance that youth give them, you know, when they try to get involved in their life. But youth definitely need structure. They're not, I call youth, teenagers kidults, right? They're not kids, but they're not exactly adults, and they don't make wise decisions, you know, on their own. And they just need healthy adults around.
And I think maybe like even in your case, when mom was handed or dealt a hand of cards that wasn't what she was expecting in life and didn't have the tools to make right decisions too, I think that has a huge impact on what's passed down. Because if I haven't even ever discussed this with you, but chances are, I bet your grandpa and grandma, both sides, were probably solid, church-going people that were just that generation of good, solid family people. And it seems like that generation after that World War II generation, everything started to fall off the ledge. And yeah, we don't have the foundation anymore.
It was in my mom's generation, the 60s, during the Cultural Revolution, during that period. And my grandparents, my grandfather, my mom's dad was a federal agent for the Treasury. My grandmother was a charge nurse. And on my dad's side, they had their issues. They were really, my grandmother was a Christian. They were all believers. My grandpa was there, but he was a little bit more absent than he should have been with my dad. And I think that kind of contributed to some of the issues there. But like, I had adult modeling in my life, which was a resiliency factor for me, which is probably why I'm sitting here. When the miracle happened in my life and things came back together, I knew how to live life because it was modeled for me by people around me. And even though that they may have been totally exasperated by me and not wanted to have been around me, like, you know, and had a hard time managing me, that those healthy adults in my life did have a huge impact on how I later lived once I came through all of the struggles that I had.
Yeah, there was a foundation that my grandparents and my aunt and uncle laid down, even though my upbringing with my mom and dad, right, especially my dad, was totally out of left field, being abused all those years. But when, you know, I have an A score of 8, and the only thing that kept me somewhat of not becoming the next Charles Manson or Ted Bundy was the fact that I always had that to lean back on, because I saw that in my early years of a foundational belief structure, that I needed and knew I needed, and that kept me on the straight and narrow, even though it wasn't from my parents. Those generations before made a huge difference.
Well, and so that's one thing that, you know, admittedly that I have, you know, had an advantage of in my life. And a lot of people, a lot of teenagers come from generations of dysfunction and they don't even have one. They don't even have one person in their life. And this is why I think mentoring is so important, you know, and getting out in the community and mentoring people, especially, you know, we have a lot of really healthy people in our churches and who aren't really tied to like formal service settings, but like really, I know care about the community and just like getting involved and stepping out of their comfort zone and wrapping care around one youth can really break a cycle of you know, this generational curse that, you know, keep it from going into generation after generation after generation. I mean, when I worked in child welfare, I had, you know, parents that came in and there's like their parents were involved, you know, and their parents were involved. And now, you know, it's grandchildren involved in the system because it's a cycle. It's a cyclical thing where they don't really have a way out because nothing, you know, only unhealthy behavior is being modeled for them.
Tell you what, we're going to take our last commercial break. And on the other side of this, I really want to talk about the last year and a half. Has this put fuel on the fire of substance use and this disorder that you're a profession in and have great wisdom in? And what has it done to adults, children, families, our country? And we're going to talk about that in greater depth. Get involved. I know my phone is just vibrating out. Oh, this is unbelievable. I just have just message after message. So you're hitting the heartstring. If you want to get on Facebook and put a comment or question, feel free to do so. Or 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back for the final segment after this last commercial break. Hang with us.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and I want to let you know the last 45 minutes have just flown by, and Michael Pritchard is our guest tonight, and his work with Covenant Training Consulting and CCAP, and just his work with SUD and the substance use disorders is just overwhelming, and this is very, very informative tonight, and lots of texts and emails and things and comments of how you're making an impact on people, so thank you for sharing. What have you seen that's out of the ordinary that has come out of this first round of COVID, and now that it looks like we're maybe going into round two, God forbid, but it's coming. I mean, our numbers are and I think Florida yesterday had the most numbers ever since the beginning of COVID in Florida yesterday on Saturday. What's this doing to substance use disorder? What's this doing to us as people?
Oh, thank you for asking. So like I said earlier, people use drugs in response to negative emotional states, loneliness, boredom, personal loss, job loss, you know, stress in the pandemic, isolation, all of these things contribute to, you know, substance use, utilizing substances as a, you know, a coping mechanism during times like this. So Pete Nielsen, who you know, our CEO of CCAP, and his team really foresaw that this was going to elevate issues at the beginning of the pandemic. And so he wrote a white paper that he submitted to our governor, Governor Newsom, and basically utilizing data from other catastrophes that have happened, Hurricane Katrina, 9/11, and showed that mental health issues went up, substance use issues went up. So we were advocating for more services and, more money being directed toward this issue, because substance use is the greatest public health threat that we face even without a pandemic. It costs the government more than heart disease, depression, diabetes, all these other common chronic medical issues that we deal with. I like to think of it as an octopus that has its tentacles wrapped up in every major social problem that we face. And so, anyway, we knew it was going to cause a problem. Well, sure enough, a year later, the data on overdoses, we'll just use that alone, from fentanyl and psychostimulants, methamphetamine and cocaine overdoses have also shot through the roof. In 2017, when Pete and I went to Washington, D.C., it was 70 and 72,000 overdoses that year. And at the height of that time, in 2017, it was 174 deaths per day and 415 if alcohol was factored in. This year, we believe that it will, well, I think the numbers were like in the pandemic, the overdose rate shot up about 30%. We were at like 93,000 overdose deaths. So in that year period, it shot up way, way beyond what they anticipated even happening. And so it's indicative of people are using more. The drugs that are out there, including fentanyl, I mean, it's pure. A lot of times people are using things that they don't know they're using because, of the purity and strength of the drugs that are actually out there on the street now. Surprisingly, in our area, California has huge meth issues back east and down south. There's a lot of opioid issues. We have them here too. But in California, in Fresno and up and down the valley, and particularly our county, we had in 2019, we had 77 overdose deaths for methamphetamine. It jumped up to 121. It went from 7 fentanyl deaths to 17. So it's not just opioids, even though that's the focus. It's amphetamines. It's increased alcohol use. It's a real problem. It is a real problem. And people use in response to negative emotional states. So, we obviously need to focus on people's mental health. But when people start using substances and addiction develops, the substance use disorder develops, it morphs into its own issue. And then you end up having mental health issues and now an addiction to deal with. And it really complicates how you treat it because now you're dealing with a co-occurring disorder.
Right.
And so it's scary what's happening out there. I'm worried about our nation related to drugs. I always have. But in this pandemic, I'm even more concerned than I've ever been.
Is it the straw that broke the camel's back? By just having this one layer of worldwide anxiety? Or is it just fuel to the fire of everything else? And even a anxiety like COVID pandemic or something like that brings up past anxieties and pulls wounds off, scabs off wounds that they thought was healed. Or
I think it's all of that. When we look at risk factors, we look at availability of drugs in the community. So about once a year, every year, the UN puts out a report called the UN Office of Drugs and Crime Report. And I go in there and the drug market is all supply and demand. So if you see more drugs being produced, more drugs being seized, production going up, there's a demand for it, right? So demand is going up, but why is it going up? That's what we should be asking ourselves. There's a lot of, even before the pandemic, there was a lot of, there's a lot of political tension, lot of tension between ideologies in America that's happening, a lot of racial tension in America, a lot of, you know, it's getting harder and harder for people to achieve the American dream. Like, I think that people have expectations, and those expectations, it becomes more financially hard for people to meet. And then the pandemic happened, and like, you know, people lost their jobs, businesses shut down, you know, people lost family members. You know, all of their hopes and dreams were kind of put on hold and put on pause. You know, they may have had, you know, other issues that they were having before the pandemic, and now a lot of people are isolated from each other. And so now they're carrying those burdens on top of like whatever's happening in the pandemic. It's really hard to untie and untangle this knot in terms of what's going on inside of people in this situation. But like I said, people use drugs and alcohol in response to emotional states typically, you know.
I think when I spoke at CCAP not too long ago, I did a slide on what I am calling the perfect storm. I can't remember if I did it because I do that presentation 5 times a week, but sure. Racial tension, political tension, financial, marital, the media, and it just seems like everything is in this basket, and then you throw on top of it different views of what the news is telling us how we need to handle it. Yes, masks today, no masks today. Yes, vaccines work, no, they don't. Well, we really don't know. And all of this uncertainty has caused us into a perfect storm of anxiety and stress. And ultimately, they've reached for, how am I going to cope with this today?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are even, you know, questioning, like, you know, do I want to go back to work? Do I want to like change my direction in life now? And they've had a year to think, and you know, there's a lot. I think there's a lot of things going on with people. I mean, we had issues before the pandemic, and like you said, once the pandemic got thrown on top of that, it was just like it's overwhelming. So, I mean, I've been through a lot, and I think that I deal with life pretty well now, but even it's had its days where I've been just really down. Yeah. You know, I've been really down as a result of what's happening. My son struggled tremendously in this pandemic, you know, not having his social connections that he had and his regular activities that he had, and he didn't get to walk and graduate. That was another thing with kids.
Oh, that's huge.
They didn't get to do prom. They didn't get to do formal. They didn't get to graduate and walk, and college students too. I mean, all of these things, weddings are different now. I mean, everything has changed as a result of this. So it's not surprising that the substance use issues have gone up, mental health issues have gone up. And I would just encourage people out there, you know, it's easy for me to give resources in the county that I live in because I know them. I don't know the resources across America for people to get help in every area that they're at. But I would say this, that if you notice yourself using or drinking more, maybe you were a casual drug user before, but now you're using a lot more than you were. And you're having you're using it as a coping mechanism. You're struggling with a lot of depression, anxiety. Isolation is the worst possible thing you can do for yourself.
Right.
And I think that even calling people, getting access to even Zoom mental health and talking to another person is extremely helpful. Until we get through this, and I'm a huge advocate for services, whatever services and social connections are available to you in your community that you can find, don't hesitate in engaging them because they can make the difference for you down the road.
That's great advice. And Michael, we are completely out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. And if somebody wants to get in touch with you, just to ask you a question, what's the best way for them to just reach out to you?
They can reach out to me reach out to me via email. So they can go to, mprichard at ctc-sap.com. That's my Covenant email. And okay. I'd be more than happy to get back to as many people as I can get back to who want to email me.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for being. I consider you a friend and your work with CCAP, and hopefully we'll do some things soon and lots more in the years to come. Okay. God bless you, and thank you so much for being with us.
All right.
I always like to close our program each week by always saying, no matter what you're going through right now, no matter what you've gone through, like what Michael shared with his own life, you may have a similar story, or maybe just a one-time occurrence, or just something that doesn't have to reach to that level. But if it's impacted you, I want to let you know there's always hope. Don't do this alone. Don't isolate yourself, like Michael said. Reach out and look and grab somebody's hand and say, can you help me on this journey? There's always hope. Join us right here next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, each Sunday night for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Have an awesome week. God bless. All right.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.